I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 10:06 a.m. on Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. Present today are Representatives Hannon, Representative Johnson, Co-Chair Shragi, Representative Stapp, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Reed, Gardner, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier. Please mute your cell phones. At this meeting, we will hear the Office of Management and Budget present the governor's amendments published on April 25. Then we will take up two bills, House Bill 14, repealing catastrophic illness medical assistance, and House Bill 123, taxation, vehicle rentals, and subpoenas. With us today from the Office of Management and Budget is Director Lacey Sanders. Director Sanders, please come forward. Put yourself on the record. Begin your presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Josephson. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Office of the Governor, and this morning I will present an overview of the amendments that were transmitted on behalf of the Governor last Friday, April 25th. Okay. So to start.
Yep. Director, we've been joined by Representative Allard, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Stapp, I think I hadn't named before. Please continue.
Great. So starting on slide two, we have provided an updated version of the fiscal summary that incorporates the amendments that were submitted last week for both fiscal year 2025 supplemental and for fiscal year 2026 budget. As a reminder, this reflects the updated spring revenue forecast that was released in March by the Department of Revenue. And I'm not going to walk through this slide line by line because I will walk through the groups of amendments on the following pages. But as noted in previous presentations, with the addition of the amendments that were transmitted, the overall surplus and deficit for unrestricted general funds in 2025 is a total of $165.1 million. Based on the governor's proposed items. The fiscal year 2026 governor's proposed budget, with the inclusion of the amendments, totals, just at $1.65 billion. And again, I'll walk through the items that were submitted on the following slides.
Let me intervene here. Ms. Sanders, Director Sanders, the $165 million, what is our number on just regular debt from FY25? It was $82 million. Oil prices have come down. What part of that is the 165, if you know?
Chair Josephson, I'm blanking on that number off the top of my head. You are in the ballpark. I want to say it was 70-something million. If I can follow up with you
okay.
after that.
That'd be great. And we've been joined by Representative Bynum. We have a question from Representative Stapp for the director.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Justin, through the chair to Director Sanders. Just to kind of piggyback on the co-chair's question, pretty much the day after the spring revenue forecast was adjusted for FY25, oil price has been substantially below that, I think, every day. So it would be helpful if you could give us a ballpark of the actual deficit on top of what where it was projected, if you could, before the end of fiscal year. Thanks.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I will note I don't have the specific numbers off the top of my head, but in conversations with the Department of Revenue, there were some refunds that were made to the Department of Revenue that came in higher than what were anticipated. And so that has kept our surplus and deficit fairly stable for fiscal year 2025, even with the decline in the oil revenue prices that we've been facing. Also, just as a reminder, there's very few months left in this fiscal year. So with higher prices at an earlier year, it maintains the revenue forecasted amount fairly stable.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please continue.
All right. Starting with the FY 2026 operating governor's amendments on slide three, there are three labor negotiations that reached agreement. The first is in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. This is the collective bargaining agreement between the State of Alaska and the Alaska Vocational Technical Center Teachers Association, or AVTECTA. This is a salary schedule realignment and a 5% cost of living adjustment for its members. Within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the collective bargaining agreement between the State of Alaska and the International Organization of Masters, Mates, and Pilots, or MMP, was reached. And lastly, within the University of Alaska and the United Academics Adjuncts agreement was reached, which included across-the-board increases of 2.75% for fiscal year 2026. So those are the three contractual agreements that were reached and total just over $1.1 million in unrestricted general funds as well as other funding sources. However, lastly, under the federal receipts, there is an increase of $3 million for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. In late March, the department was notified of a change in federal guidance from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for the Office of Refugee Resettlement. This is a formula refugee support services grant that was previously administered by Catholic Social Services. The new guidance is requiring that these funds now be directed to a state agency, and as a result, the Department of Labor will need $3 million of federal receipt authority to administer grant awards for that grant. And that encompasses the FY 2026 operating amendments.
Please continue. We have a question, however, from Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jolson. Chair, how many more labor contract agreements are we looking at? In the future, there's more coming. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, yes, there are four outstanding agreements.
Thank you.
And because that was a good question, my committee always asks good questions, but that was a particularly good one. Can you remind us of the four, if you know?
Chair Josephson, I believe if Corey Mills is on the phone, I would like her to address which four, just so I don't get the naming conventions wrong. Is she online?
She is. Ms. Mills, if you could help us.
Yes, happy to, Chair Josephson. This is Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General from the Department of Law, for the record. So the four contracts that we are still actively negotiating, Alaska State Employees Association, General Government Unit, Confidential Employees Association, the Inland Boatmen's Union, which represents the unlicensed marine unit, and then Marine Engineers Beneficial Association. Those are the four union negotiations that are still ongoing.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, could you repeat those, please?
Deputy AG Mills, could you repeat those?
Yes, happy to. So Alaska State Employees Association, otherwise known as AFEA, Confidential Employee Association, otherwise known as CEA, Inland Boatmen's Union, IBU, and Marine Engineers Beneficial Association. We usually call it MEBA, M-E-B-A.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's go to slide four.
Slide four represents the FY25 operating supplemental requests that have been submitted. So starting with fund capitalizations, on April 18th, the state was notified from the Federal Elections Assistance Commission of a federal grant award to the state of Alaska for election security. The grant totals $272,800, but requires a 20% state match of $54,600. This request capitalizes the election fund. And then from there, we have a capital project on the next slide that appropriates to the capital project from the election fund. Due to the requirements by the state to agree on the terms of the conditions by late April, early May 2025, this has been proposed as a supplemental item.
Okay. So they're both election related, both lines.
This line, through the chair, this fund capitalization is specific to the deposit into the election fund On the next slide, there's a capital project for the same item. It's just the spending side of
it. Got it. Okay.
The second item within the supplementals is under special appropriations. Okay. Throughout the year, the Department of Law is continuing to finalize judgments, settlements, and claims, and then provides them to the Office of Management and Budget for submission to the legislature. These are submitted as supplementals in order to meet the terms of those judgment settlements or claims. Holding them until the following year can result in interest being accrued or additional penalties. So there are four items within the special appropriations totaling $346,400. The first is Bittner versus the State of Alaska. There is the Alaska Quality Care LLC settlement, the state versus Z.C., and then a modification of $364 for a previously submitted item. And again, we have WAG Corey Mills on the phone to address any questions if there are specific details with those judgment settlements or claims.
Okay. I don't see any.
Moving on to slide five, as I noted, this is under the Office of the Governor, the capital project for the Election Security Project. It is a supplemental for fiscal year 2025 and is the item that I noted on the previous slide. Okay. And that concludes my comments.
Okay. Ms. Sanders, how do we know on this on the collective bargaining agreements? I assume that prior to conference committee, those numbers will be knowable. How else does the conference committee resolve those?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the labor relations team continues to work with the outstanding labor contracts. Or on the outstanding labor contracts to seek agreement to the terms. And as soon as those are available, we will ensure that the legislature is made aware of them. I cannot speak to the timing. The previously agreed time frame that we discussed was by Friday, April 25th. And as noted, there are four still outstanding.
Okay, question from Representative Galvin.
Thank you. And as our margins are so slim, I think you've asked a really important question, Co-Chair Josephson. And I can't remember, but I know we were given a number as a placeholder for some of the agreements. I think Alexei had given us a placeholder number. I think he had a high, middle, and low. And I'm not sure if, and of course, some have been since resolved. But with the four that are outstanding, I wondered if we could try to ascertain a high, medium, low on those or something so that we could be prepared, given that our margins are so slim.
We can ask Director Sanders, but I think I know what's coming, which is uncertainty to the extreme.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I cannot give any information about details, or I don't have, and I don't have the knowledge to. Those are confidential conversations.
Of course, occurring. Understood.
Okay.
So a follow-up might be, Chair Josephson, if we could, at some point, maybe have, maybe it's offline, but we have a conversation with Alexei, who had given us, Mr. Painter had given us some sort of a number as a placeholder, and maybe we can subtract out the ones that he didn't know about that now we know. And I just think that there must be some formula for us to at least get a high number for our, to protect us, to know that we have enough funds in preparation for that. I want to make sure that we are not catching ourselves off guard. And so I think it would be worthy of a conversation just to have something on the side prepared for that.
I'll make some inquiries. All right, at this time at 10:20, we're going to take a brief at ease.
Wait, I have a question.
Go ahead.
I have a question for...
Yep, Representative Johnson, you bet. Go ahead.
Thank you. I didn't know if I didn't want to jump in there because I have a question that's not really related to this. But
well,
so, I mean, it's related to it's for Ms. Sanders, but it's not really related to this. So we added there was a much discussion, and I should have called you about this, but about the receipt authority for 50 positions in DOT. And so there was started with a constituent that had said that, you know, they I believe we added those somewhere in the midst of our operating budget process. And I was wondering if, you know, you had any comments on that, or if you had tracked that or were aware of that.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, if you can clarify, you're stating that there were 50 positions added in the Department of Transportation with the receipt authority?
Yes. As I recall, there was a constituent thought that if we had that there was actual positions available or money available from the feds to provide positions to allow DOT to get some of the contracts and so on out. And so in the midst of our operating budget, we added, I believe, 50 positions that would require federal receipt authority. It just kind of went through, and I didn't really think about it too much until just, I mean, I have thought about it, but I haven't followed up as far as trying to do any research on it. So I was just wondering if you were aware of that amendment that went through, and if you had any thoughts on that.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I would need to do a little bit more digging into that one. I apologize. I did not come prepared to talk to that item today.
Yeah.
So I will follow up with the committee and follow up on the impacts of the addition of that item.
All right. Thank you.
Can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Back on record at 10:23 on the subject of DOT federal receipts. Director Sanders.
Chair Josephson, I will follow up with the Department of Transportation and clarify on the 5 positions that were added.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to go at ease and give the gavel to the co-chair. We're at ease.
Okay, House Finance back on record at 10:24 a.m., and we've got two bills before us today. The first bill is House Bill 14, that's repeal catastrophic illness and medical assistance. We had about half a dozen bills or so, maybe slightly more, that were supposed to be heard over the past 2 weeks, but gotten pushed back, and this one is supposed to be heard first on April 16, I believe, so it's been about 2 weeks. And then the other one is House Bill 123, that's vehicle rentals taxation, and that bill is first supposed to be heard on April 11th, so it's been almost 3 weeks now, and so we're finally getting the first hearing on these bills, and we're going to go ahead and introduce them today. We'll review the fiscal notes and then set the bills aside. It doesn't look like we've got invited testimony, so with that, HB 14, repeal catastrophic illness medical assistance, Representative Stapp, if you'd like to put yourself on the record, also available for questions, we've got Director Deb Etheridge with the Division of Public Assistance. So with that, take it away.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the record, my name is Representative Will Stapp, and this is my staff, Bernard.
For the record, Bernard Oda, staff to Representative Stapp.
Then Co-Chair Foster, member of this committee. Today we're going to be talking about HB 14. For a lot of you, it's going to be a bill you might have recognized, passed out of this committee and passed this House nearly unanimously last year. So what HB 14 does is it repeals a program called CAMA, Catastrophic Acute Medical Assistance. So last year in this committee, we actually defunded the program, and the reason that we did that is because no Alaskan had been a recipient of the program for many years. So inside the packet for the bill this year, I included a thing called the mid-year status report, which the Ledge Finance Division checks with the departments to see how they are doing on all the things we did to their budget. And the question issued to the department was if they countered any issues related to defunding of this program. And the agency response was the department had not encountered any issues relating to defunding the program because no Alaskans had applied for assistance under this program. So just to give a brief history of the program, it basically began in 1986, 1 year before I was born, for the record. And it was designed to basically kind of bridge a gap between individuals who were either too young or made too much money on Medicaid or Medicare in the event that they had a big catastrophic medical event. So a lot has happened in the world of Medicare and Medicaid and public assistance programs since 1986. Ultimately, Medicaid expansion and a bunch of other changes in these types of programs rendered CAMA basically null and void. And now with the expansion of the federal marketplace, anyone who would not qualify for CAMA, which is practically zero, would probably have better options on the federally facilitated marketplace than they would do under the program, which is why no Alaskans qualify for it currently or in the previous year or the previous year before that. And that's kind of my opening statement.
Okay, and maybe we'll go to the fiscal notes before we go to questions. So with that, Ms. Etheridge, if you could walk us through the fiscal notes, maybe put yourself on the record and also cite the control code.
Yes. For the record, my name is Deb Etheridge. I'm the director for the Division of Public Assistance. I am going to do the walkthrough of the fiscal note with OMB component number 236 and control code lowercase y, capital M, lowercase G, capital T and capital Z. In front, the repeal of the catastrophic illness medical assistance fiscal note reflects a zero fiscal note for the Department of Health Division of Public Assistance. Since the implementation of the Medicaid expansion group in 2015, most individuals now qualify for the modified adjusted gross income MAGI Medicaid. Really eliminating the need for the chronic and acute medical assistance program. As stated by Representative Staff, currently no one is using the service as its only eligible population is illegal immigrants who do not meet the 5-year residency requirement for Medicaid, and most of which can receive access health insurance through the federally facilitated marketplace. This does require a regulation change, but we can... The division can integrate the regulatory repeal of CAMA into our regular updates with minimal impact on the Division of Public Assistance Field Services. And with that, I'm happy to take questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Etheridge. We'll go to questions. We don't have any invited testimony. I guess my question, Representative Stapp, refresh my memory. Did this not make it to the floor? It didn't make it through the Senate, or what was the...
Yeah, I think Co-Chair Foster... So basically, bill passed out of the House in this committee and then went to the Senate, made it through the lower Senate committee, went to Senate Finance, and it basically kind of just ran out of time. It wasn't that high on the priority list compared to other things in Senate Finance, so they never ended up hearing the bill. So they did keep the deletion of the actual appropriation in their version of the budget, too. So that actually item wasn't conferenceable between either body. And then nobody added it back, so I think we should probably just kind of finish with passing the bill and then carry on.
Okay, real good. Go to questions, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and my question is probably for Ms. Etheridge. The fiscal note shows us it costs nothing to cut this program. Does it save us any money to cut the program, or is this program, it's just a cleanup, and it costs us nothing, and it saves us nothing.
Ms. Etheridge?
For the record, this is Deb Etheridge, through the chair representative. The limited amount of individuals who actually inadvertently maybe apply for the program, is we've had maybe 9 people apply, none eligible because they're otherwise eligible for a different Medicaid category. It just reflects very little change in the daily work that we do. So neither saves money nor costs additional money.
Thank you.
Further questions of the committee? Okay. Seeing none, we can take 2 paths. I can either set an amendment deadline. I've heard some feedback from folks who might be interested in moving it. Fairly basic bill that we heard last year. So what is the will of the committee? Okay, Representative Nelly, if you'd like to make a motion.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move House Bill 1434-L Lima S Sierra 0211/A-Alpha out of committee with the individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, hearing no objection, House Finance moves House Bill 14, which is version 34-LS0211/A out of committee. With attached fiscal note and attached committee report. If folks can be sure to sign the committee report, Representative Stapp.
Thank you to all the members of the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, with that, we'll jump right into the next bill, and that is House Bill 123, that's vehicle rentals taxation. And if Representative McCabe, as well as his staff, Ms. Julie Morris, would like to come up, put yourself on the record. Online for questions, we also have Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director of Tax Division, and Trevor Consoliver, Attorney with the Department of Law. And so with that, welcome Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Foster. So for the record, I'm Representative Kevin McCabe. I represent District 30. I appreciate the opportunity to introduce House Bill 123, a long overdue fix to Alaska's broken vehicle rental tax system. I appreciate the opportunity, committee, to hear this, to present this bill today. Today I have with me my staff, Angela Steffel, and Julie Morris, who is online to do the sectional should the committee wish to have that read into the record. So HB 123 is about fairness, clarity, and relief. It cuts the rental tax for traditional companies and peer-to-peer platforms like Turo. It would lower the vehicle rental tax from 10% to 9% for traditional rentals and down from 10% to 7% for peer-to-peer rentals. It brings relief to Alaskans and visitors in a state where travel costs are already high. But more than that, it levels the playing field for local entrepreneurs who rent out their personal vehicles. Right now, they're expected to handle the tax collection themselves, which is a complicated and unfair burden. HB 123 shifts that job to the platforms where it belongs. This bill also draws a line in the sand. It protects Alaskans from being hit with back taxes for past rentals under unclear rules, offering peace of mind and ending collection efforts. At its core, HB 123 supports small businesses. It encourages competition, keeps price down, and fosters growth without raising new taxes or cutting corners on revenue. It also cleans up a legal mess that's been lingering since 2018. There was a lawsuit, then came the veto of SB 127. HB 123 will replace confusion with clear, enforceable rules that match what's already working in cities like Anchorage. The current system loses revenue due to noncompliance and enforcement gaps by shifting collection to platforms. HB 123 secures steady revenue at fairer rates. In closing, HB 123 is a win for all Alaskans. It cuts taxes, protects people from past mistakes, and ensures a fair system that works for everyone going forward. As technology like Turo advances, our laws must keep up. This bill does that, funding roads and parks while helping Alaska businesses thrive. It's a practical fix for a problem that's currently hurting Alaskans. And I thank you for hearing this bill, and I welcome your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. First, we'll go to the 2 fiscal notes, and then we'll come back to questions. So first fiscal note we've got is with the Tax Division, Mr. Brandon Spanos. If you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, for the record, Deputy Director of the Tax Division, Brandon Spanos. And I'm looking at fiscal note control version VXUHX. And this is an indeterminate fiscal note. We don't have the data for platform rentals to know how much a tax of 7% would generate. We do know what the historic tax is for the brick-and-mortar rentals, which is changed in this bill to 9%. So on page 2 of our fiscal note, we show what the loss in revenue from a 10% tax to a 9% would be. We anticipate that if the market share of platforms is 12.5%, that this would be a zero note. If that market share is lower, then there would be a loss in revenue. If that market share is higher, then there would be this would generate revenue.
Great, thank you.
And the implementation costs are zero.
Thank you very much. And just a correction, we only have one fiscal note. And so with that, we've got a couple questions. And first we'll go to Representative Josephson and then Representative Stapp. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Spanos, if I've got it right. So the State Department of Revenue doesn't know how many units there are, that is how many vehicles are owned and in operation by Turo owners?
Mr. Spanos?
Co-Chair Josephson, that's correct. We don't know how many vehicles are being rented through an online platform.
I follow.
Follow up.
Is that because when queried, Turo refused to give you that information?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we did years ago subpoena Turo for that information to give us the identities of those that were using their platform to rent the vehicles, and no, that was not provided. The court case, the judge determined that while we had the authority to subpoena the information, we did not have the authority to enforce our state subpoena outside of Alaska.
All right.
And that's, that language changes in this bill as well to allow us to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to the folks online. Just a couple of questions. First, on the former Co-Chair Joseph's question. You guys track business licenses, right? I mean, at the state level, the Department of Labor, I mean, I think you'd have some good idea how many people are. And you track them by SIC code, i.e. what type of industry. So I would imagine you have to have some kind of ballpark just looking at business licenses, which they're required to have at the state level, and seeing kind of by what thing. Did you try it that way through the chair?
Through the chair, yes, we have looked at business licenses in the past to try to identify vehicle owners that were renting their vehicles. We do have a criminal investigation unit that spent some time looking through and pulling those records. We did identify a handful of taxpayers that were using online platforms, but it was not very successful. We know there's more than a handful of taxpayers renting their vehicles on these platforms, but either they were not getting a business license or they were not using the correct code to identify that they were renting their vehicles.
Okay. Is that a fault, Mr. Co-Chair?
Follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So as far as the kind of ballpark on the revenue, so I know we don't have an example at the statewide level, but I do know that there are municipal governments in the state that have kind of implemented this already, and they have a pretty clear picture of the revenues they are collecting. Have you guys looked at, I think Municipality of Anchorage did this basically, and then they have a clear understanding of what their revenues are after they did it. Are you basing your projected revenue on that at the very least through the chair?
Yes, through the chair. Thank you for that question. We have contacted Anchorage Municipality, and in fact, they did testify in a prior committee on this bill, or perhaps it was the other vehicle rental bill. I can't recall now, but Alaska, or rather Anchorage, Muni has testified that the information is confidential and that they can't share it.
One last follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So I was obviously not asking for the people in that. I'm just asking for the money. I mean, when you did your analysis on the money, I'm sure Anchorage's like public, government. I'm sure if I looked at their municipal books, they would have a line that says vehicle rental tax and then money. So I'm just curious if you guys at least use that as a data point when you were projecting the fiscal note, through the chair.
Mr. Spanos?
Yes, we have. Our economic research group did gather some information from Anchorage and did try to extrapolate that, but did not feel comfortable with the knowing how many. First of all, the information doesn't include how many vehicle rentals there were. It was just simply a revenue number. And so it was... our economic research group is not comfortable extrapolating that to the state.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So what I'm seeing in this fiscal note is that Alaska stands to lose $1.74 million in UGF if this bill passes. And we have no idea how much Turo will bring to us. I see that Anchorage itself has an 8% tax for vehicle rentals, and that's not including Turo already. So would the 9% tax apply on top or replace that?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I'm not sure I understood the question. Are you asking if the 9% tax would apply to the vehicle, the online platforms like Turo, or
no.
if that would be on tax? Sorry.
I believe we're changing the 10% tax that was in the bill to 9% statewide for vehicle rental, and then Anchorage has an 8% tax. So does that mean that it will go from 18% to 17% in all?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes. Currently, it's an 18% tax if you rent a vehicle in Anchorage. 10% goes to the state, 8% to the muni. And this bill, if it were passed and you were to rent from a brick-and-mortar rental company, that would be 17% total.
Okay, and I don't want to repeat Representative Stapp's questions, but I do feel as though this uncertainty is real, because we already know we will be losing $1.74 million should this pass, and we don't know that we'll replace that hole with the 7% rental tax on Turo. Is that correct?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, yes. It's indeterminate because we don't know how much the online 7% rental would generate.
Representative Galvin?
I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Representative Hannon?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Instead of torturing Mr. Spanos with this, I'm going to go to the sponsor, who I assume has done some research, or his staff has, on these online platforms. Mr. Spanos said 12.5% was the percentage they were using. If 12.5% of vehicle rentals, then it's cost neutral. If it's more than that, would generate revenue. If it's less than that. So, Representative McCabe, do you have any sense of the scale of Turo or other online platform peer-to-peer rentals that there is currently in the Alaska market?
Representative McCabe.
Through the chair, thanks, Representative Hannon, for the question. And as a matter of fact, I do. So Keep in mind, Turo is a private company, so they do not have to report some of the things that we would normally expect to be reported from a company that is listed on the stock exchange. And they are a little bit different than a regular rental car company in that they are a platform. However, they have told me through others that the, and without disclosing the amount, they have said that the tax collected on cars rented in Anchorage would cover the loss of 1% in the state, and everything rented outside of Anchorage would be increased revenue for us. And that's kind of as far as they were willing to go with me when I talked to them. So I don't know if that makes a difference. My idea was mostly, and I've said this from the beginning, my idea with this bill is twofold. Subpoena powers are fabulous so that we can tell what they should be paying, right? But the other thing that it does is it protects retroactively Alaskans who have been renting Turo cars for the last 10 years from having to go back and either figure out how much tax they owe the state or collect it from people that may have rented a car from them 9 years ago, or even worse, pay it out of their bank account. So keep in mind that Turo owners typically, they buy a car that might be a little bit out of their wheelhouse or out of their, maybe punching above their level, and then they rent Turo when they can to make some payments for it. And now we're going to ask if we are following the law, or if they are following the law. Department of Revenue is going to ask these Turo owners, hey, you rented Turo for the last 3 years. Where's the taxes that you owe based on the business licenses? So this would protect those people and say, we are going to start clean and move forward from here. And you can see, I think, from the questions that everybody has asked, what a mess this is right now. And this is simply my attempt to solve it. Also, keep in mind, if you don't mind, Chair Foster, this bill was vetoed this past last year, and the governor vetoed it based on the fact that it was it appeared to be an increase in tax to Turo. And I want to be very, very clear that the Turo owners already owe that tax right now. And this is actually a, sort of an agreement between industry to drop them to 7%, drop the legacy to 9%. So as a Republican, it's, for me, it's a tax cut. But it's a revenue-neutral tax cut, if you can think of it that way.
Okay. Next up, I've got Representative Allard, Representative Bynum, Representative Josephson. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I'm going to follow up after my fight buddy over here. My question is, when do you believe, Representative McCabe, that this could promote more individuals to wanting to be on this Turo platform, and maybe we would be able to develop more revenue because it's more clear in the state law? What is your thought on that? Because we just heard somebody say it's going to take revenue, but I think this is a good thing, and I'm just kind of seeing your thoughts on that.
Representative McCabe.
So through the chair, thanks, Representative Ballard. I think so. I think right now that if you were to get into Turo and you were to say, and some people are doing it, mm-hmm. Hey, I have to collect this tax myself instead of through the platform. Somebody rents your Turo car and they pay on the platform, and then you say, wait a minute, you owe me an extra X amount of dollars. It's kind of weird. So now they pay on the platform and you have to have another check coming in to pay or credit card means of paying the state tax. If it was one kind of, they pay on the platform, you know how Turo works or Uber, those kinds of things. You know, your credit card's always there and there's no transaction required. There's no check required. There's no receipt required, any of that kind of stuff. That's the beauty of a platform. I think it would generate more people. More people would say, oh, okay, now I can do it on the platform. I don't have to separate them, so to speak, and I'm not responsible for the tax. It comes through the flows right through the platform. I think so. I think it would help bring more people into it.
Okay. Representative Bynum, then Josephson and Stapp. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, we keep referring to Turo, but this bill encompasses much more than that. This would be any online platform, including startups. Wouldn't that be correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. And then a follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, sir. Currently, right now, the major platform operator in the state of Alaska, they do have the capacity or ability to collect the tax, but we need this mechanism in law in order for them to actually do that. Is that also accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, absolutely. So, yes, it's already on the platform in Anchorage. If you rent a Turo out of Anchorage, it's already seamless. It just works completely on the platform. We just need the law. We need the regulation to sort of solidify this.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we've got Representative Josephson and then Stapp. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, a few minutes ago, you used three words that really caught my attention. You said an agreement between industry. Is this like the previous bill in that we were told, I wasn't in the room, that there was an agreement between the various sectors of the car rental industry?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. So they have sort of reached an agreement. I don't know if you'd call it a gentleman's agreement or what, that nobody's going to complain too much if it goes forward this way. So there won't be any lawsuits, and they're not going to say the major rental car companies aren't going to sue for the constitutional, you know, the equal protection sort of thing. That's the agreement as I understand it, not written down, not signed. It's just a gentleman's agreement that we need to put this in place. And keep in mind, my sole goal in this whole bill is to protect those Alaskans that will be harmed for 10 years of retroactive Turo renting without collecting state taxes.
So, quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
So through the chair, last year's bill was a 10%, 8%. This is 9%, 7%. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair, to Rep. McCabe. So first, thanks for bringing this bill forward. And I did want to put on the record, I went to the Municipal Anchorage's website, and I actually looked at their taxes that they report publicly on how much money they actually get from these things. And very clearly, a 1% reduction in the vehicle rental tax offset with this tax on Turo generates substantially more revenue. I assume that's because a lot of folks who are currently maybe not reporting that they do Turo and stuff like that now are reporting because of that. But I did want to thank you for bringing the bill forward, because I think if you're going to have a tax structure on really anything, you got to think about kind of how you treat different branches fairly, right? And I think the worst thing that you can do in government is basically to have one entity pay a tax when another entity does the same thing and they don't get to pay a tax at all, because that just creates an artificial structure. So appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Thanks.
Okay. Next up, we've got Representative Galvin, then Johnson and Hennen. Representative Galvin?
I'll pass. Representative Stapp covered it.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
So I kind of did thank you, Mr. Chair. I did some of the similar research. And first of all, I just want to say thank you for bringing it forward also. I think it's great because you're giving something kind of for everyone. I think it's good that you're putting in the forgiveness piece, because it lets people start from ground, you know, from zero and be honest, straightforward when they probably want to be. But, I mean, it's been so mixed up, it's hard to figure out where people have really been and how much maybe they owed and so on and so forth, so that'll be good. And so what I saw, and this was 2020, I'm quoting from an ADN News article, so it's hardly anything official, but it says the Anchorage Assembly passed an 8% vehicle rental tax to include platforms, and that raised it by 5%, which brought in $760,000. I mean, 2020 seems like you'd probably have to be a little low on the, probably not the highest point of the vehicle rentals that year. But that, if you just followed that, that would be $95,000 a year from 8% on if you just followed that out, that's what Anchorage would end up getting. So that gets really close, and especially you have other statewide markets. So I just want to say that, you know, municipally, I know this has worked really well for the city of Palmer with Amazon actually collecting the taxes and sending it to the city.
I know a lot of municipal governments that's been really helpful for, and that's the way it should be done. So anyway, I want to say thanks.
Okay. Next up, I've got Representative Hannon and then Bynum. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and I guess I want to just amplify and agree with Representative Stapp that when we have a tax on one part of the sector and a new product comes into the sector, we should have the same tax on it. Maybe we should extend that to the area of nicotine. And I've been an advocate for this Turo tax since I've been here and have been a user of Turo. I want to jump into the bill on page 2 and just make sure I am reading this correctly on line 16. The vehicle rental platform that arranged or executed more than 200 transactions in the state. And I want to confirm on the record that that's the platform having 200 transactions, not an individual vehicle. So, yeah. So any platform that we're now going to tax that does at least 200 transactions. All right.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that's correct.
Right. And so follow-up.
Follow-up.
One of the versions of this bill 6 years ago included phrasing about how many vehicles and how many days you had it rented. That's not in this bill at all. It's just if you're renting it on Turo, and we're just using Turo as the example, like Kleenex, even though it might be a different brand of tissue. So you're renting on a platform, whether you rent it once or whether and one vehicle or whether you have a fleet that you're doing, the same tax applies.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that's correct.
Great. I think that, yeah. And I appreciate you taking another stab at this. I wish we weren't lowering the taxes, but, you know, it was vetoed. We're going to change something up. And if we have less resistance and get this into law, I think it will generate revenue for us. So thank you.
Okay. Next up, I've got Representative Bynum, then Galvin. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, I guess more of a comment, but maybe you can affirm the comment, is there's been a discussion about people that haven't paid their taxes. My assumption is that there may be some people that have done that on purpose, but there are also a lot of people that have unintentionally got onto the platform using that to rent their personal vehicle and were not aware that they had a state income tax or a state tax due, and now have been caught where they have now realized that they may owe a tax that might be extensive. So I just wanted to clarify that I don't think that all the folks using the platform are intentionally trying to cheat the system, but unintentionally that has occurred. So we're trying to correct and protect them.
through the chair, Representative Bynum, that's exactly right. There certainly could be those small percentage of people that are doing it on purpose. I think the majority of the Turo owners are in the boat that you said is, and they're actually called hosts, the Turo hosts that own a car that are running through the platform, probably didn't even realize that they needed to collect a state tax separate from the platform. Whether they thought the platform was already collecting it or whether they didn't even know they were supposed to. So this bill tries to protect them and correct that.
Thank you. Okay, next up I've got Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So I do know that Turo typically has a kind of a complicated system of how it charges. For example, we know that Turo can apply a variety of fees, including things like a trip fee, and that can range anywhere between 2.5% and 100%. Also, there appears to be a wide range of variables like the vehicle value, advanced booking time, the trip duration, things like that. And so typically what they do is, based on wherever Turo is in the world, it will be a kind of a regional-specific factor that plays in. And Alaska has a lot of interesting ways you could twist and turn that. But your intention is to have Turo collect a flat tax, period, and none of these extra levers that get pulled in other places would be pulled here that you know of.
Representative McCabe.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that's correct. That's the only thing that we're trying to do here is to make sure that the state rental car tax that is fair between the legacy or the, you know, the old normal rental car and Turo.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any further questions? Representative Galvin?
Yes, thank you. Sorry, this is one extra one that comes to mind, and I don't know if we already have this in here, but if you could help us. Let's say it turns out that the revenue forecast for Turo, which at this point the only information we have is we think, based on confidential information, that we will cover Anchorage deficit that would happen when we lower the taxes of other types of vehicle rentals. And so given that, I wondered if we had, given the lack of certainty, that if we've put a sunset on this or anything that will allow us to reevaluate should it turn out to be a loss for the state.
Ms. Representative McCabe.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, so really the idea here, one of the ideas that I've had, is exactly what you just said. I mean, that's an excellent question. So in a year, in 2 years, we reevaluate and say, wait a minute, we did a good thing. Turo is sharing the load here, and maybe even they're oversharing the load, so maybe we could make them more equal than they already are, or reduce them both. Keep in mind that there is separate percentages, like the motorhome rentals are, I think, 3.5%.
Yeah, 3%.
So there is some disparity in the, or disparate taxes being levied, and maybe at some point the legislature would look at it and bring them all closer together. But I don't think it needs a sunset. I think we can do that pretty much any time. So.
Follow up, if I may? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative, the reason I ask that is I know sometimes when taxes get into play, it's very hard to change them, and it becomes, unless we've put some sort of a marker out there saying we are going to reevaluate here or there, because you know, the industry then says it's uncertain, and then we lose opportunity for investment sometimes in industry, and we don't want to do that either. So this is why I feel like the sweet spot can be, you know, it's important for us to be considerate of that. You know, in general, though, I appreciate where you are coming from and why you are where you are in this. I do think, though, that we need to be cautious to, at this point, because our numbers are so slim, that we make sure to not surprise ourselves. And so I appreciate that conversation and that you've thought about it. It is difficult to make changes in taxes. I know for mining, for example, I think it's been 50 years. And so I just want to caution us, all of us, to recognize that, as you know, there's a big uncertainty here that we're risking, but it's worth it for what we get. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. See the chair to Representative McCabe. Just a quick question for you. So I was looking at this in the reduction in the overall tax. It looks to me like you're giving a lot more flexibility to municipalities as well if they want to have more space to do. Often we hear from AML how they don't like us doing things at the state level because we're giving them less flexibility. But it appears to me like your bill is giving them more flexibility to do things, through the chair.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Foster, and through the chair, Representative Stapp. That was sort of an unintended consequence, I think. Wasn't really planned, but the way the bill came out and the way it was worded.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, seeing no further questions, I think we've probably exhausted all the questions we might have, and so I think what I'll go ahead and do is we'll set an amendment deadline, unless folks would like it. Okay, I'm getting some head, but we don't need more information, it sounds like. Representative Galvin, do you have? Depends on who you ask. So I could set an amendment deadline, but if we can either ask those questions at the next meeting, Or we can not set an amendment deadline and still ask the questions. I think we're probably okay to set the amendment deadline. And then we'll also be taking public testimony. We'll get that figured out. But we'll go ahead and set the amendment deadline for Friday, May 2nd at 5 p.m. And if you could submit those amendments, if you have any, to my staff, Mr. Rhode Anderson or Ms. Helen Phillips. And as I mentioned, we'll take up questions at that meeting as well. If we do need more time, you know, we can always slow down. We don't have to, if there's any in thinking of moving the bill, but folks have questions, we can always adjust. So with that, we've got some questions. Representative Johnson, Representative Bynum, Representative Johnson.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't write this down, so I kind of skipped and now I remembered. But I was looking through the bill and I thought that it says the will become effective immediately, I think. But what I was wondering is, I mean, you know, you can decrease the tax immediately, but you may not be able to actually, because it looks like the department, actually, I don't know if the person's still online, but anyway, it looks like the department might have to do a few things to get it up and running. And so I guess I was just wondering if you just wanted to think about that and maybe how you want to have the effective dates. If you want to have them go in together at the same time, that's all I was thinking. You might want to take a look at that. That's all. Thanks.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not so sure because they're already taxed. They're already set up to tax and deal with the legacy rental cars, and the Turo is already set up to do taxes in Anchorage. So my idea, and I haven't checked with anybody, but my idea was this is all kind of operating. We're just putting it together and solidifying all the, you know, the code essentially or the statute for this. So,
Representative Johnson.
So you, thank you, Mr. Chair. I you may be entirely right. I was just looking through what the document said, and it said the state will have some, I don't know, certain they'll have some administrative things that they'll have to do, and maybe some. Some changes to, you know, bureaucracies sometimes take a little time. I thought you just might want to take a look at it. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, Representative Galvin.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around what this could become. I know sometimes people think about the, you know, if we had a group of, let's say, a fleet of 50 cars and we're making that our Turo business, does that, since we don't have any brick and mortar, that still stays Turo and we don't have to pay the additional taxes, right? It wouldn't move from 7 to 9%. But I want to kind of think this through. If the firm becomes a brick and mortar, let's say, and while they have online bookings and an online platform, would I then pay the 7% tax, or do I get moved up to the 9% tax?
Representative McCabe.
Yeah, through the chair, well, that's a really good question, and probably one that I don't necessarily have the answer to. I mean, at what point do you become, mm-hmm. if you're a Turo user, at what point do you become an enterprise or an Avis? And yeah. I suspect it has a lot to do with whether you have a brick and mortar place and you know, parking lot and big you know, big area to park your cars. This is certainly not designed to cover those types of businesses. This is designed for you and I that might have a spare car. Maybe our kid went off to college and left the car, and we just want to get a little revenue from it. It's not really designed for those that buy 50 cars and have to establish a you know, a parking lot and a building and a place to wash them and clean them and all that sort of stuff. So it's a good question, and it's one I really never contemplated. What is the dividing line?
Yeah, I know that. Thank you, through the chair. I know that there are. I happen to know personally that there are folks who are doing this who have maybe 5 cars right now, and just didn't know if we were going to define that line, because in a way it is a bit unfair, and that may be why we need to consider lowering the larger, the Avis and others who are paying
a larger percent because there are some who are doing that sort of business in a way that is, you know, quite a great business. So I appreciate that this is could become more complex, and sometimes it makes sense to have definitions, and sometimes maybe we let the department do it themselves. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I appreciate Representative Galvin's question because I'd had the same question before earlier looking at the bill and then talking with the sponsor of the bill. And it's just, you know, the thought came of, you know, how do you use these platforms and how do they coordinate when you're trying to create a business model? I know that from that research, the larger companies that have brick and mortars have different insurance structures that they use than the platforms. The platforms provide the insurance structures for you at a higher cost. And so there's different cost models associated with using the platforms. But on page 2 of the bill, starting on line 29, they provide a definition under section 2. And specifically, it does state that the vehicle owner is separate from the actual platform owner. So I would have to own the vehicle myself, and then I'm using somebody else's platform, unlike the brick and some of the brick-and-mortar rental companies that have platform options available. They own the vehicles, and they also own the platform.
That's true.
So, and just a comment from the similar research from that same question. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Foster, for the opportunity to share.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I appreciate that nuance. I think that's an important nuance. It's interesting how some of these platforms, for example, I know sometimes I'll pick up a cab, and the cab is also running Uber, and they're running Lyft, for example. So there are a lot of blurry lines there, and I thank the maker for kind of trying to keep it as simple as possible, but also appreciating that sometimes this can get out of hand. So thank you.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. I wanted to just clarify, Turo being set up, as you said, in Anchorage to pay sales tax to Anchorage, correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Follow-up? So if somebody was going to set up Turo, say, in Bethel, or if I wanted to rent a car in Tuxuk, which I don't have, but would they have to set up a sales tax to be paid to Tuxuk or Bethel?
Representative McCabe?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I think that's where Representative Stapp talked about. It makes it easier for the municipality to do the same thing Anchorage is doing if they have the tax structure. So, for instance, if Wasilla had a tax structure where they decided that they were going to tax Turo cars as well, it would be easier for them to do that just like Anchorage has done.
So it follow-up.
Jimmy?
So it would work with that city of Tuxuk Bay or Bethel?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't see any further questions, so thank you. Anything further, Representative McCabe?
To thank the committee for the questions, and once again, I think all the questions and all the sort of confusion demonstrates why this bill is important, and I look forward to bringing it up again in public testimony and getting it passed this year.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just had a procedural question. I just wanted to get clarity on your amendment deadline and then when this might be coming back up. So would we, you know, have the amendment deadline and then hear those amendments and then finish public testimony and then move the bill? Or would we be hearing this for maybe another, you know, multiple times as we move forward?
So we can adjust. So what I'm thinking is we don't have a date scheduled in terms of when the next hearing is. The amendment deadline, of course, being this Friday, May 2nd at 5 p.m. But the order of operations that I foresee would be take public testimony. We'll announce public testimony. We'll take public testimony. And then we'll allow for questions. And if the questions go smoothly, then we could go through the amendments. And if it's the will of the committee, we can move the bill. If we run into some snags, people need more time, when we go through questions, then we can always not take up the amendments at that meeting, but we can take it up at another meeting. So anyway, with that, I think that's everything for today. And our next meeting is scheduled for today at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we'll hear HB 78. That is the PERS bill. We do have a presentation from Gallagher on the actuarial from DOA. And so with that, if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 11:15 a.m. Thank you.